Hello there everyone, I'm Rob, a producer on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 27th of April, 2022.
Hello and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon Centre. We are pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspaper skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD. Simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Angela. Speaking for us this week, we have myself, Rob, Craig, Helen, Angela, Christine, Ed, Liz, Ian, Mike, Tim, Jan, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We have the weekly quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, the weather, information about how to vote in the upcoming local elections, we find out about the history of our canals, and we also have another bit of history as Craig looks at the humble pork scratching. And rounding us off, we get into the garden and find out what we can see blooming this May. However, we start this week with our Guess the Sound question. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you have to do is simply guess what it is. So, here's this week's clip. Have a think on that, and Mina will reveal the answer later, alongside the usual quiz answers. We now have then, as always, some local news, brought us by Christine, Ed, Liz, Ian, and first up, it's Angela.
1 million extra people are expected to use railway services when the Commonwealth Games kicks off in the West Midlands later this year, chiefs have said. Network Rail said it is anticipating a busy period ahead of the major Birmingham and Black Country event and is currently preparing to get the railway in the best possible shape. Chiefs have trained more than 100 volunteer station hosts at Birmingham New Street, stamped out graffiti and have a high-tech response vehicle if incidents happen. The major Birmingham Games will see a range of events taking place across the region, including at Sandwell Aquatic Centre in Smethwick and in other locations. Denise Wetton, Network Rail's Central Route Director, said, "We're pulling out all the stops to get ready for the million extra journeys we're expecting while the Commonwealth Games are taking place, so that passengers can get to the Games safely and reliably. It's great to be able to welcome so many extra passengers to the station, and we'll have extra staff and volunteers on hand to make sure visitors to the Games get off to a winning start." Work to install lifts at Smethwick Galton Bridge has been accelerated to make sure that they will be working for visitors to the Sandwell Aquatic Centre during the event. Malcolm Holmes, Executive Director, West Midlands Rail Executive and Director of Rail at Transport for West Midlands, said, "With more than a million spectators expected for the Games, we need to make it as easy as possible for people to leave the car at home and go by public transport. This will help us manage congestion and emissions and keep the region moving during what will be a very busy time."
More than 500 visas have been issued to people in Ukraine fleeing their war-torn country after being sponsored by people in the West Midlands and Staffordshire. Government figures show 510 visas have been issued through the Homes for Ukraine scheme in the region, with Birmingham being the largest in the area, with 232 put through. But the true number of refugees fleeing their country and arriving in the region is likely to be higher, with the figures not accounting for the other visa applications. A spokesperson for Wolverhampton Council said, Under the Homes for Ukraine scheme, four people have arrived in the city of Wolverhampton. They are all individuals, not family groups. A family of five is also expected to arrive in the city after May the 6th. There is a separate family visa scheme, but under that scheme, families make their own individual arrangements. People are allowed to join family members already in the UK, and those here can extend their stay amid Russia's invasion through the Ukraine Family Scheme. Figures show 39 visas have been approved for sponsors in Wolverhampton, with 31 in Dudley, 16 in Walsall, 24 in Sandwell, and the highest of 232 in Birmingham. Balvinder Haran, Deputy Chief Executive at Dudley Council, added, "We've received a number of applications from people across the borough who would like to welcome Ukrainian refugees into their home as part of the government's Home for Ukraine scheme. We're working with all applicants and carrying out the necessary property and safeguarding checks as quickly as possible. So far, seven host households have been approved and one refugee has already joined their host. We expect more arrivals in the coming days and weeks."
The National Trust has apologised after a schoolgirl was bitten by a snake during an Easter picnic. The 8-year-old is now recovering at home after being bitten at Kinver Edge in Stourbridge on Saturday. The schoolgirl spotted an adder at the National Trust run Heath and Woodland and reached her hand out towards it in curiosity when the venomous snake struck, causing her hand to swell. A National Trust spokesperson said, "We were very sorry to discover this incident had happened and have been in contact with the family involved. An incident like this is rare, as adders' usual behaviour is one of a flight rather than attack. They feel the vibrations of an approaching human and usually hide before they can be spotted. Kinver Edge is a site of special scientific interest, and the adder population here is both regionally and nationally significant, as they are the fastest declining reptile species in the UK. In the lowland heath areas of Kinver Edge, where adders reside, we advise visitors to stay on the main paths to avoid disturbance to the wildlife." After being bitten, her father, David Rathbone, sucked out the wound to try and get the venom out before driving her to Kidderminster Hospital. Staff transferred her to Birmingham Children's Hospital, where she received two IVs of anti-venom serum and gave her a tetanus jab. The girl from Birmingham is now doing well and is expected to return to school in King's Heath after the Easter holidays.
The number of workers on company payrolls in parts of the region has continued to increase, while other areas have seen a fall, new figures show. UK unemployment has dropped to its lowest figure in 50 years, according to official data from the Office for National Statistics. Although soaring prices are still hitting the pockets of people across the nation as earnings fail to keep up with inflation. ONS figures show that in Wolverhampton, 112,547 people were in payrolled employment in March, up from 112,497 the month before and from 106,367 in March 2021. At the start of the pandemic, 109,348 people were in payrolled jobs in the area, but there was a fall in Walsall to 114,851 people in payrolled employment in March, down from 115,026 the month before, but up from 110,119 in March last year. The number also fell in Sandwell to 139,582 people in March, down from 139,643 the month before, but up from 132,783 in March 2021. And the number dropped in Dudley too, where there were 135,654 people in payrolled employment in March, down from 135,822 the month before, but up from 130,992 in March last year. Across the UK, the unemployment rate hit 3.8%. 8% in the 3 months to February. It has not been lower than this since 1974. Chancellor Rishi Sunak said, "The stats show the continued strength of our jobs market, with the number of employees on payrolls rising once again in March and the unemployment falling further below pre-pandemic levels."
A £1 billion plan to revolutionise transport in the West Midlands will provide a powerful vehicle in delivering the government's levelling up agenda, the region's mayor has said. The West Midlands has been handed £1.05 billion in City Region Sustainable Transport Settlements funding, which is expected to rise to £1.3 billion with local top-ups. Conservative Mayor Andy Street says the award shows the region has continued to make a compelling case to attract investment, while other areas had missed out. And he said the ability to attract investment, along with the determination to develop improvement, had been a pivotal factor in the region's success. Mr. Street said, "Levelling up aims to create a more balanced economy, ensuring investment and opportunity reaches communities across the nation. In the West Midlands, we are proving that transport investment, allied with local decision-making, can provide a powerful vehicle to deliver this critical mission. The transport cash will be invested across the region over the next 5 years and will be used for a host of schemes, including improved bus services and an extension to the West Midlands Metro depot in Wensbury. It will also see a network of 10 electric vehicle charging stations across the region, while £56 million has been allocated to deliver phase two of the Sprint bus routes." Mr. Street said the bus service improvement plan is a key part of the region's aims for sustainable travel. Figures from the West Midlands Combined Authority show that prior to the pandemic, bus use was by far the most used form of transport, with 267 million journeys a year compared to 50 million for rail and around 7 million on trams. However, bus usage has now fallen off a cliff, and it was recently revealed that more car journeys were now being made than before the pandemic.
Now it's time to hand over to Helen, who has for us this week's Beacon Update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from the Beacon Centre, back with another Beacon Update after a break in which I have been able to enjoy some of the lovely sunshine we've had. How are you? I hope you've been enjoying the recent warmer weather. Long may it continue, I say. First up this week, we'd like to say a very big thank you to the Worshipful Company of Spectacle Makers for their generous support of Beacon's activity programme to get people moving again after the pandemic. As a result of their funding, we'll be able to provide sessions aimed at improving people's mobility, confidence and independence. We can't wait to share the results with you later in the year. Next up, how does someone with sight loss check the use-by dates of food? We'd love to hear your suggestions, but we think that one of the easiest solutions is a gadget such as the OrCam ReadSmart, which will read back text to you when you press a button. It's just one of the ways that technology can help make you more independent if you're living with sight loss. To try the OrCam ReadSmart for yourself, book an appointment with our sight loss advisors on 01902 880 111. That's 01902 880 111. Now, what would you do with £1,000? I tell you, there is quite a lot that I could do with that. Well, if you sign up to the Wolves Lottery, you'll be in with a chance of winning that each and every week. Even better, you'll also be supporting people with sight loss with a donation of 65 pence from every £1 played made to the Beacon Centre. It costs just £1 a week to enter, and you can find out more on our website, www.beaconvision.org/support-us/wolves-lottery. Lastly this week, do you fancy a coffee and a catch-up? It can even be a tea if you want. Well, why not join us for our next Beacon Coffee Morning? We'd love to welcome you along. Come along between 10am and 12pm at our Sedgley Centre on May the 13th. It costs £5 to come, and to book your place, call 01902 880 111. We also regularly hold coffee mornings at our Stourbridge Centre if you'd like to join us there too. That's it for another week. Hopefully, I'll be back again soon. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for that update, Helen. Up now, it's another block of local news. And the first voice you'll hear, it's Christine.
The new link road between Wolverhampton and Cannock will destroy historic woodland and sit just 40 metres from residential homes, a parish councillor has complained. The Secretary of State for Transport gave consent for the road between the M6's Junction 11 and Junction 1 of the M54 through the villages of Featherstone, Brinsford and Shares Hill. The £200 million infrastructure project, which will reduce congestion on local roads, includes the construction of the 1.6 mile road, redevelopment of Junction 11 and a realignment of Hilton Lane. South Staffordshire councillor for Hilton, Paula Dawes, said, "I am really disappointed the link road has been given consent. We all know something has to be done, but of all the potential routes of the link road, this is the one we did not want. This new dual carriageway will be just 40 metres from homes in Hilton, and in this time when we all know about the dangers of pollution, there must have been a better way." She added, "Under this route, Dark Lane will become a dead end, and so many lovely trees and ancient woodland will be destroyed. The road will run through farmland, which once belonged to Hilton Hall, and includes woods, pools and a rookery, which birds return to every year." Councillor Dawes continued, "I know the farmland is private. I've not been to the ancient woodland and pools since I was a little girl, so it will be sad to see it disappear. The vast majority of people were against this route because of the loss of Greenbelt land, but it is a case of now trying to make the best of what has already been decided. We will continue to do everything we can to minimise the impact on the local environment."
Eligible people in the Black Country and wider region have been reminded by health chiefs to book their spring booster vaccination. Thousands of people across the area have already been invited by text, email or letter to book their booster appointment, the fourth jab. Now, care home residents, people aged 75 or over, and those aged 12 or over who have a weakened immune system can come forward to book an appointment if they are yet to receive an invitation. Adults will be offered either the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine, and those aged between 12 and 18 will be offered the Pfizer vaccine. Appointments can be booked online via the National Booking System or by calling 119. Sally Roberts, Chief Nursing Officer for NHS Black Country and West Birmingham Clinical Commissioning Group, said, "We're delighted that we can now offer appointments to everyone eligible for a spring booster dose. Having a spring booster jab helps vulnerable people, including the elderly and those with weakened immune systems, to maintain a high level of protection against the virus. COVID-19 hasn't gone away and it's still spreading in our community, so it's never been more important to get vaccinated. There's no need to wait to be contacted. If you're eligible, you can book your spring booster dose now. Appointments and walk-ins are also still available for first, second and for those eligible booster doses, so do please come forward if you are due a dose. It's never too late, even if you've previously declined the offer of a vaccination."
Three people have been arrested in a series of police raids in the West Midlands by officers investigating £1 million of fuel thefts. Officers from North Wales Police and West Midlands Police targeted a suspected organised crime gang in the West Midlands, targeted properties in Smethwick, Dudley, Handsworth and Smallheath. The raids followed an extensive joint policing operation between the forces, with the properties including residential and industrial units where fuel could be held. Three people were arrested while officers seized a heavy goods vehicle suspected to be linked with the thefts. The group is suspected of being involved with around 40 thefts of more than £1 million of fuel across the country. North Wales Police said seven of the incidents were reported within North Wales, prompting action from the forces. In each of the offences in its patch, committed at industrial units in Wrexham, Flintshire and Anglesey, Approximately £50,000 worth of fuel was stolen. DCI Alan Oldfield from North West Police said, "The arrests are the result of an intensive year-long investigation which sought to identify those responsible for a spate of large-scale fuel thefts. Led by North Wales police officers, this cross-force operation culminated in the execution of targeted warrants across the Birmingham area. I would like to thank West Midlands police officers and the customs and excise staff who assisted in this operation. Victims incurred significant financial losses as a result of these crimes, and today's arrests will disrupt the coordinated planning of future fuel thefts across the UK. The arrested suspects remain in custody and the investigation remains ongoing."
Stourbridge's shuttle service was restarted on Saturday after it was taken out of service due to ongoing vehicle maintenance at the end of last month. The service, considered to be the shortest branch line in Europe, at 3/4 of a mile long, makes roughly 214 trips every weekday. It runs to and from Stourbridge Town Station and Stourbridge Junction Station, but was taken out of service on the 30th of March. A statement from Pre-Metro Operations, which operates the service, said the shuttle will return to service from the 23rd of April. "We want to thank everybody for their patience and understanding during these engineering works."
Major redevelopment works have started up at a dilapidated former youth club building to transform it into a community centre and church. Windmill Community Church is leading the way on the project at the former Compton Boys Club on Henwood Road, Wolverhampton, to make a space to host various activities. The church has taken on a long-term lease from Wolverhampton Council, who were keen to find a community group to secure the vacant site for the community. Terry Wilkes, senior leader at Windmill Community Church, said, "We are thrilled to announce that funding needed for the main renovations has now been secured or pledged. Over £300,000 has come in to pay for the new roof, windows, doors, new central heating system and electrics. An amazing amount of that has come from within the church congregation and supporters, showing the strength of local support. Our thanks go to Biffer Award, FCC Communities Foundation, Garfield Western Foundation, Bernard Sunny Charitable Trust, Eveson Trust, Dorothy Stone Trust and others for their generous contributions. Without their support, this transformation project would not be happening. It plans to create a similar facility to one in Finchfield, where a derelict chapel has been converted into a new church and community building serving a number of different groups." Mark Taylor, Deputy Chief Executive at Wolverhampton Council, added, "It's fantastic to hear of the successful fundraising that has been carried out by Windmill Community Church and to see that work is underway to create a new meeting place for local people."
Up now, it's time for your weekly mental workout, as we have the quiz questions.
Hello and welcome to this week's Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. How old is the Black Country Museum this year? Question 2. How many acres does it occupy? Question 3. How many old mine shafts are thought to be beneath the site? Question 4. What is the name of the chemist shop? Question 5. What is the name of the lad who is thought to hunt the bottle and glass pub? And finally, question 6. What milestone has recently been achieved by the museum? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show, but for now, good luck!
While you give those questions a ponder, we have some more local news. And speaking for us first, it's Angela.
Television presenter and former MP Michael Portillo paid a visit to the Heritage Centre in Whitmoreen's Wolverhampton on Saturday as part of his Great British Railways Journeys series. Mr Portillo met members of the centre to talk to them about the Windrush generation and the legacy of Enoch Powell's Rivers of Blood speech, which was written at the Heritage Centre when it was Mr Powell's constituency office. He sat and spoke with Carl Samuels, Alicia Spence, Bishop Llewellyn Graham, Junior Hemmons, Professor Mel Chevenez CBE and Dr Patrick Vernon OBE as part of a section of an episode heading to Kidderminster. Social activist and Windrush campaigner Mr Vernon said it has been a symbolic talk by Michael Portillo about a speech which carries impact more than 60 years later. Mr Vernon said he felt he wanted to demystify the Enoch Powell speech and wanted to clarify it, particularly the impact of the speech as it led to an increase in hate crimes against black people in a particular period. It also reinforced the casual policies of segregation, with a specific policy by Wolverhampton Council in the 1960s limiting the number of black and Asian children in school classrooms because of speech given about immigration. I said to Michael that one of the reasons we still have such a fascination about it is the way it has influenced politicians across all parties.
The mayor of Dudley has seen how a bottled water company has been working to help people in Ukraine to access clean drinking water. As part of the Made in Dudley Borough initiative, Councillor Anne Millward was given a tour of Growth Water's warehouse in Stourbridge, where they bottle, label and prepare still and sparkling water for distribution across the country. The firm is sending around 18,000 bottles of water to conflict-hit regions of Ukraine with the support of many other local businesses. Richard Higgins, director of Growth Water, said, "We've been overwhelmed by the level of support for our Ukraine campaign among businesses and other organisations in the area. We're sending nearly double the number of bottles that we were expecting to send. Interest in the campaign is growing day by day, and it really reflects the compassion and generosity of the people of Dudley Borough. It was fantastic to welcome the Mayor of Dudley to our premises, share our business's story, and show her this much-needed delivery. Growth Water's social conscience extends to protecting the environment, and their bottles are made from 100% recycled plastic. They also sell coolers and taps that are designed to substantially reduce the amount of plastic used in hospitality venues, offices and other locations." Councillor Anne Millward, the Mayor of Dudley, said, "We've all seen pictures of the damage and destruction in Ukraine, and it's awful to contemplate how the most affected people are struggling to get their hands on essentials like clean drinking water. I'm proud to see a local business like Growth Water stepping up and doing what they can to help the situation. They are a wonderful example of our borough's community spirit and values."
A landmark Wolverhampton pub's plan to extend opening hours has sparked concerns from neighbours and a city councillor that the move could lead to increased noise nuisance. Pub giant Marston's has applied for the Hollybush on Penn Road to have a variation made to its current licensing allowances. However, the proposals have raised fears from nearby residents of unwanted disturbances, along with local councillor Celia Hibbert, who represents Penn Ward. In a letter to licensing bosses, Councillor Hibbert said, "I have received several objections from residents in this area, and I have been out to the streets around the Hollybush to listen to some of the complaints being raised. I quite agree with the residents that this variation should not be granted. No matter what the day of the week is, I think it is rather too early to sell alcohol at 8:30 a.m. This is a residential area, and opening that early means the delivery vans coming in even earlier. Apparently, these vans already arrive just before 8 a.m. and that wakes up a lot of elderly people around there. In addition, there are also children who need to get ready for school who will be affected. With regard to closing even later, This will increase antisocial behaviour, which we are already struggling to contain in this part of Penn, she added. The application from Marston's added, the types of regulated entertainment proposed materially do no more than reinstate the normal pub entertainment that was previously unregulated. The premises already has the benefit of an external licensed area. These are sought to be enhanced, but are already used in the consumption of off-sales. It is therefore not anticipated that any issues will arise.
Santander is cutting its branch opening hours from July in what it says is a response to long-term trends in customer behaviour. The changes mean branches, including many in the West Midlands, will operate from 9:30 to 3 p.m. on weekdays instead of until 4 p.m. The bank said branch staff will still be available for pre-booked face-to-face appointments between 3 p.m. and 5 p.m. if customers need support that cannot be provided through alternative channels or earlier in the day. The shake-up will also see 316 branches move from being open on Saturdays from 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. to operating a half-day service closing at 12:30. Those affected by the reduced hours on Saturdays include Dudley, Kidderminster, Stafford, Stourbridge, Sutton Coalfield, Tamworth, Walsall, West Bromwich and Wolverhampton. The bank said the number of customers using its branches fell by a third over the 2 years before the coronavirus pandemic and a further 50% in 2020 and 12% in 2021. Santander bosses have confirmed the changes will take place from July the 18th and there will be no compulsory redundancies or a reduction of employee working hours as a result. Richard Owen, head of branches at Santander, said, "These changes will enable us to maintain our existing branch network while providing significant additional capacity to help customers who want to talk to us by phone. We have seen a continuing reduction in branch usage over several years, both before and since the peak of the pandemic, with many customers preferring to transact digitally or contact us by phone. We want to make sure we have the right mix of channels to help our customers however they choose to bank with us."
Maryhill is set to unveil a new and improved H&M store later this year, aimed at providing a better experience for shoppers. The transformation sees the fashion retailer commit to the future of Maryhill with a refreshed store design stocked with a range of women's wear, men's wear and children's clothing. Ahead of its refurbishment, H&M will temporarily relocate to a two-storey pop-up store, which shoppers can find on the upper and lower malls opposite Boots from April the 25th, allowing visitors to continue shopping during the improvements. The new store is expected to open during late autumn, and H&M members in the area are expected to benefit from new offers when the new store opens. Tony Garley, country manager at H&M, said, "Our aim is to offer our customers a modern and meaningful shopping experience where style, creativity and culture are celebrated, and we are confident that our Maryhill store will offer exactly this." Jonathan Poole, centre manager at Maryhill, said, "We are always looking at new ways to improve the shopper experience at Maryhill. We're delighted that H&M are investing in their already very popular store at the centre, which will provide a new and improved offer for visitors. We know H&M is a really important store for our customers, so we're making the move to the temporary home in a two-storey pop-up store as smooth as possible, with minimal disruption to customers. It's exciting to see our strong fashion offering with more than 200 brands under one roof continuing to evolve for the future.
With local elections on the way, up now we have some information about voting when you're visually impaired.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Tim to tell you about voting on the 5th of May and options for voting if you're visually impaired. This year, elections are scheduled to take place on Thursday, the 5th of May, allowing voters in England, Wales and Scotland to choose their local councillors. In Northern Ireland, voters will be electing a new National Assembly government. If you are visually impaired, don't forget you can ask for assistance at polling stations if you're unable to see the standard voting papers. There's a reminder of the options for visually impaired voters at the end. Elections in England, Scotland and Wales will decide the political makeup of local councils, which are responsible for services in your area. Council responsibilities vary, from services such as rubbish collection and planning in district council areas, through to road maintenance, education and providing mental health services in metropolitan and unitary council areas. In England, more than 4,000 councillors in 146 councils are up for election this year. This is around 43% of England's 333 councils. With so many English councils, local elections are staggered over a four-year cycle. Also in England this year, voters in South Yorkshire will be choosing a regional mayor, and there'll be elections for around 10,000 councillors to serve on very local parish councils. In Wales, there'll be elections in all 22 local councils where every seat will be contested. In Scotland, there'll be elections for all 32 local authorities. In Northern Ireland, voters will choose 90 politicians to run the National Assembly. At all elections, every voter has the right to vote independently and in secret. And if you're visually impaired, local authorities must ensure that polling stations are accessible to you. The Cabinet Office has told all returning officers that people with sight loss should be able to use tools such as video magnifiers or mobile phones to help them vote independently. Unfortunately, however, the final decision about whether to allow these options sits with each individual returning officer, so this is not guaranteed. At the polling station, do mention your sight loss to the person on duty and ask whether you can use your device as a reasonable adjustment under the Equality Act. If your local polling station does not allow magnifiers or mobile phones, or if you prefer to vote in a different way, you can use one of the following three options. Large print ballot forms. By law, every polling station must display a large print copy of the ballot paper for reference. They must also provide a reference copy for you to take into the booth with you. You can use the large print copy to read all the information on the ballot form, but you must still cast your vote on a standard print ballot paper. A tactile aid. Well, every polling station must also provide a tactile device that will help you mark your vote in the correct place on the ballot paper. The tactile aid has a sticky backing which attaches on top of your ballot paper. It has numbered flaps with numbers raised and in braille over the boxes where you mark your vote. You may need to use the large print ballot form or ask someone, a friend or polling station staff, to read out the list of candidates to you. You'll need to remember the number of the candidate you want to vote for, then lift the flap with the same number and mark your cross in the box. You then detach the tactile aid and fold your voting paper in half before placing it in the ballot box. Help at the polling station? Well, if you have difficulty using a large print ballot paper or tactile aid, you can ask someone to help you at the polling station. They can help guide you between the entrance, desk, polling booth and ballot box. They can also vote on your behalf. You could ask one of the polling station staff to do this, or you could bring a companion. If you bring a companion, they must be a member of your immediate family of voting age or a qualified elector, that is, someone legally able to vote in a UK election. And finally, if you don't want to go to the polling station in person, you can apply for either a postal vote or to vote by proxy. But you'll need to do this in good time before the elections on the 5th of May. Voting by proxy allows you to appoint someone you trust to go to your polling station to vote on your behalf. Unlike postal voting, you don't need to give a reason for a proxy vote. Explaining that you find it difficult to get to the polling station because of your sight loss or another disability should suffice. If you want to vote by proxy, you need to register your request at least 6 working days before the election. You'll need to complete an application form from your local authority, but beware that unless you're registered as blind, you'll need someone such as a GP or social worker to support your application. Applying for a postal vote is also possible, but this normally needs to be done at least 2 working weeks before election day. If you register in time, A postal vote means your ballot paper will arrive in the post so that you can vote in your own home. At home, you'll be able to use your own magnifying equipment, but you could also request assistance such as a tactile voting device, a large print ballot form for reference, or help with returning your completed ballot form. Whichever option you prefer to help you on polling day, don't forget to vote.
TNS Soundings.
Up now, we've got our final block of local news for this edition. And starting this one off, we first hear from Ed.
A growing pizza chain's latest branch will open in High Street, Dudley, next month, creating 15 full and part-time jobs. Young entrepreneur Harry Singh is launching his fourth Fireway Pizza franchise store in just over a year on Monday the 2nd of May at 12 noon. The first 100 pizzas will be free at the grand launch. Fire Away has grown up to more than 100 stores in just over 5 years. Mr. Singh, who has two stores in Kent and Gloucester, said it offers something different to the big players and we don't have your traditional pizza conveyor oven. We offer a healthier, fresher concept with a huge variation of menu items. We also do Italian gelato milkshakes and a fabulous selection of scrumptious desserts, including our special Nutella pizza. The grand opening in Dudley will also feature fire breathers, a DJ and giveaways. Mr. Singh will also be offering free food for the homeless and vulnerable the entire day at the store near the town's post office. The new Fire Away can be followed on social media accounts on Instagram and Facebook, where a competition is running for free pizza for the entire year. Another new franchise of Fire Away Pizza opened in Darlington Street in Wolverhampton City Centre, creating a dozen new jobs in February. Another new branch in Walsall was its 100th in the UK.
A popular Sikh festival is set to bring thousands of people to a city centre park. The celebration of Vaisakhi will take place at West Park in Wolverhampton on Sunday, May the 8th, between 12 p.m. and 5 p.m, taking place for the first time in 2 years. Vaisakhi is one of the most important dates in the Sikh calendar, as it is the Sikh New Year festival, and 2022 marks the 319th anniversary of the creation of the Khalsa order and making of Saint Soldier by Guru Gobind Singh Ji in 1699. The Council of Sikh Gurdwaras in Wolverhampton has promised entertainment for all the family, including a funfair, stalls and prominent Asian musicians and singers performing live on stage. There will be speeches by religious leaders, a variety of local organisations will showcase their services and free food will also be served throughout the day, with entry also free. Ian Fagan, Director of Communications and Visitor Experience, said, "Vaisakhi is always hugely popular and we look forward to this year's celebrations." With less than a month to go, preparations are underway by the Council of Sikh Gurdwaras in Wolverhampton and people who live in the city who are from an Asian background to ensure another fun-filled family event. "We are pleased that the event is returning to West Park and are looking forward to being able to celebrate the festival again after pandemic restrictions postponed plans for the last 2 years. The City of Wolverhampton Council urge everyone to put the date in their diary and see West Park come alive to the sights and sounds of the Vaisakhi Festival."
A 399-year-old copy of the first anthology of Shakespeare's plays will be visiting the Black Country Living Museum next month. The first folio was assembled by Shakespeare's friends and fellow actors, John Heminge and Henry Condell. Published in 1623, 7 years after the playwright's death, the folio was the first opportunity for people to buy a collection of Shakespeare's plays, which had previously only been published individually in small books called quartos. 18 of Shakespeare's plays, including Julius Caesar and Macbeth, had never been published before and might otherwise have been lost in the sands of time if not for the folio, which brought together 36 of Shakespeare's plays for the first time. Around 750 copies were first printed and sold for £1 each, but there are only 235 known to survive today, making this historical specimen even more valuable. Birmingham Shakespeare Library owns the only copy of the first folio, which was bought as a vision of comprehensive culture to give accessible education to all. Now the folio is touring the Midlands as part of the Everything to Everybody project, led by the University of Birmingham and Birmingham City Council, and stopping off at the Black Country Living Museum on Saturday, May the 14th. The folio will be fully and freely accessible all day and will be accompanied by a range of interactive workshops and talks from University of Wolverhampton experts. The folios, visit and competition are part of the Everything to Everybody project, an ambitious 3-year celebration of one of the UK's most important cultural assets, the vast Shakespeare Memorial Library, housed within the Library of Birmingham.
Wolverhampton Grand's panto star Tam Ryan has been named Best Panto Comic at the 2022 UK Pantomime Associate Awards. Tam picked up the gong for his critically acclaimed performance as Buttons in the 2021-22 production of Cinderella. The awards were held on Tuesday, April the 19th, at a star-studded ceremony at the Trafalgar Theatre in London's West End. Hosted by UK Pantomime Association President Christopher Biggins, a total of 27 awards were presented, with categories ranging from performers to production. Tam said, "When you consider the amount of talent paraded up and down the land, to be voted best comic is a huge accolade. As a performer, you don't just get given a part in the Wolverhampton Panto, you earn it because everything is right. And the pantomime culture here is so precious to the locals and those who come from afar. The Grand Theatre is perfect for panto because it is a very intimate auditorium, but it seats a mighty 1,200 people, which is great for comedy because you still get the big audience laughter, but none of the comedy gets lost. I can't wait to get back to Wolverhampton this year. It's going to be another brilliant pantomime season." Tam has already been announced to star in a second panto season in Aladdin at the Grand Theatre from Saturday, December the 3rd, and tickets are on sale now.
We may have just had Easter, but Dudley Zoo already has two new helpers for Santa this Christmas. Two reindeer babies have been born during the last week, called Winnie and Jeannie. Jeannie was born on April the 14th to 5-year-old mum Jasmine, and Winnie arrived 2 days later to mum Sunflower, who's also five. 6-year-old Kenny the reindeer is the dad to both calves after joining the reindeer herd last year. A spokesperson for Dudley Zoo said, "It may be Easter Monday, but we've let Santa know he's got extra sleigh pullers this Christmas, as we've had two baby reindeer born, and they're very cute. Gestation is around 7 months, and both adult females are first-time mothers, with our new mums and babies doing splendidly. We hope Santa will be returning to his grotto in the 11th century Dudley Castle this Christmas, when he'll be able to meet Jeannie and Winnie. So watch this space for more details of our Christmas festivities, and maybe news of a few more tiny hooves too."
Coming up now on this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we have our very own Flashback Roger, with his Did You Know feature.
Hello everyone, I hope that you enjoyed the Easter weekend and that the Easter Bunny showed you with Easter eggs and other goodies. Anyway, let's have a think about having a walk into the past, as I've got a few things to tell you about the Black Country Museum. Now then, did you know that? The Black Country Museum is 44 years old this year. It opened in 1978 after a long search for a suitable site and after an idea which was born in the Black Country Society. Discussions were held with local authorities, local businessmen, and with those with interest in the idea, gave momentum to the concept. The museum occupies a 26-acre former industrial site and extensive railway goods complex, part of which saw one of the first goods container handling hubs in the Midlands. There are over 40 old mine shafts on the site, just showing how important and valuable the black gold of coal was in the wealth of the area. The shafts have all been safely filled in now, but there is one mine still open as a museum attraction in the form of a drift mine with surface mine buildings for visitors to see. The museum has many hauntings, and there are quite a few reports of strange noises and apparitions which occur around the site. Many have seen the figure of a woman in black Victorian-style dress in the entry alongside Emeldu's chemist shop and also on the pavement outside. Both images disappear on a second glance. The Bottle and Glass pub has its own ghosts too. This one is reputedly the one of a young boy, a 10-year-old Isaac Mayle, who fell into the canal while leading a horse which lost its footing and both went into the water. The bargeman was concerned only in saving his valuable horse, that the lad had drowned by the time he was pulled out. During its previous season in 1978, around 8,800 people visited to see how the 26 acres former industrial land was being transformed into a museum. Since then, the Black Country Museum has grown into a major heritage attraction, drawing more than 358,000 visitors in 2019, and recently marked a major milestone as it welcomed its 10 millionth visitor. So, I hope this week's glimpse of local colour has tempted you into a bit of time travel. I know that it has for me. So I'll go and find out my Peaky Blinders cap and go dressed for the part. Now I've talked about all this, it's really made me fancy some faggots and pays. I ain't had any for ages, so I'm off to search some out. Till next week then, I'll say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit, ta-ra.
Now we have our sportsman Ian, giving you all the latest football news from Wolves and West Bromwich Albion.
Hello, I'm Ian and here's your latest football news. Carlin Grant missed a stoppage time penalty as Albion played out a goalless draw with Coventry in an otherwise drab match at the Hawthorns. The Baggies had seen their faint hopes of finishing in the Championship playoffs all but ended when they were beaten at Nottingham Forest on Easter Monday. Coventry, meanwhile, made the short trip to the Hawthorns with an outside chance of gate-crashing the top six. Despite that, though, this encounter had an end-of-season feel right from the off, with very little quality on show. Both teams were guilty of playing too many missed pass places with clear-cut chances at both ends at a premium. Albion, though, really should have won it with the last kick when substitute Callum Robinson was tripped in the box by Michael Rose. Referee Stephen Martin had little choice but to point to the spot. Carlin Grant, though, went on to see his spot kick well saved by goalkeeper Ben Wilson. The result means Albion have dropped into the bottom half of the table, with it now mathematically certain they will be a Championship side again next year. The Baggies next face an away trip to Reading this Saturday. Wolves missed yet another chance to stake their claim for a European spot with a poor loss away at Burnley. Having not won at Turf Moor since 2010, the omens were not promising, but Wolves made a good start and largely dominated the first half. They regularly found space in between the lines and out wide and had a handful of opportunities but failed to capitalise as a lack of a clinical edge again let them down. The second half was fairly dull in the opening 20 minutes with neither side putting their foot down until a moment of quality from Burnley handed them the lead. Wolves' defence was carved open and Matai Vidra was found from 5 yards with a simple tap-in. The visitors saw the majority of the ball as they searched for a way back into the game, but their killer instinct was missing. A lack of intensity until Burnley took the lead also played its part. The result means Wolves have now lost 6 of their last 9 games, as they once again threw away a golden opportunity to put pressure on the top 7. Wolves next face an encounter with Brighton at Molineux this Saturday.
Thanks for that sports update, Ian. Up now, a little bit of history, as we take a look at the history of Black Country canals, brought to us by the Black Country Living Museum.
The Midlands, as it says in the name, is right in the middle of the country. That means it's about as far away from water as you could hope to be, and yet, at its height, it was home to around 170 miles of working canals. How did that happen? Well, actually, it's really quite simple. You see, during the Industrial Revolution, more and more of the things people needed stopped being made by hand on a small scale and started being made in factories at a massive scale. Workshops, factories, and industry began popping up everywhere all over Britain, but especially in heavily industrialised centres like Birmingham and the Black Country. But how did they move these goods to sell with no lorries, no cars, no motorways, and no trains? The answer? Boats. Just one small problem though. Neither Birmingham nor the Black Country were anywhere near the sea or even a navigable river. Luckily for them, James Brindley, one of the most notable engineers of his day, was happy to help out, and between 1768 and 1772, he oversaw the building of the first canal in the region. It ran from what we would now refer to as the centre of Birmingham, although at the time it was actually just on the edge, to Aldersley in Wolverhampton. It was a roaring success and quickly contributed to the price of coal dropping by half. Needless to say, the construction of canals exploded, with 170 miles of canals crisscrossing all over Birmingham and the Black Country at its height. This dizzying array of canals became referred to as the Birmingham Canal Navigation, or the BCN, a confusing name to the uninitiated, as a large part of the canal network it refers to actually runs deep into the heart of the Black Country. Now, many of you are probably wondering why people couldn't just use a horse and cart to move things along the roads. The problem comes down to demand. Back in the 1700s, the roads of Britain, particularly outside of London, simply weren't good enough to keep up with the demand, and horses alone can't haul as much as a canal boat. Travelling by horse and cart was also a slow and sometimes quite dangerous way to travel. At the beginning of the century especially, highwaymen prowled the quieter roads, waiting to steal from unsuspecting victims. That doesn't mean horses weren't involved in life on the canals though. In fact, quite the opposite. From 1766 to around 1900, the canal system was the main means of transporting goods in the Black Country in Birmingham. At its peak, it carried around 8.5 million tonnes a year, greater than any other local canal in Britain. But when you think about these canal boats, it's important to remember that many were pulled by horses, especially in the Black Country. Engines weren't introduced to the canals until early 1900s, and even then, in the Black Country, horses never entirely fell out of favour. A canal boat could carry more than 30 tonnes at a time, with only one horse pulling, more than 10 times the amount of cargo possible than on the road. Life on the cut, the Black Country word for canal, was hard work, but provided a decent living for many. There were lots of different types of canal boats in the Black Country, but the most common was the narrow boat, designed to haul as much as possible. Some boats were designed with day cabins, which had access to basic facilities for cooking and cleaning, allowing families to live on the banks. Then there were flyboats designed for speed, family boats designed to be lived in, and icebreakers designed to smash through thick ice in the winter, to name a few. Getting from A to B in the Black Country all of a sudden became a lot quicker. For a time, before the arrival of railways, some canal boats were even used as taxis. It was a speedy 2 hours to get from Tipton to Birmingham city centre. Boats carried everything from coal to clothing, and this huge increase in movement of materials and products allowed the Black Country and Birmingham to rapidly industrialise, earning a reputation as the workshop of the world. Canals became so busy that gas lighting was installed beside the locks to permit round-the-clock operation. A near tidal effect was produced as swarms of heavily laden narrowboats converged on the Black Country collieries at the same time every day. For a time, it seemed as though this canal mania would go on forever. But eventually, the use of canals to transport goods from one place to another began to decline. There were lots of contributing factors that led to the decline of the canals, but the arrival of steam railways in the 1820s and 30s was perhaps the most significant. Combined with the decreased demand for coal, the use of motorised vehicles and the construction of motorways, the transportation of goods via canals was eventually abandoned. However, this is not where the story of the Black Country's or Britain's canal networks ends. By the 20th century, and particularly in the post-war years, people's leisure time significantly increased. Spending time on the canals for fun rather than work became popular. Organisations were set up to fight for the preservation of Britain's waterway system, and these days, the value of these places has become widely celebrated. And why shouldn't they be? After all, they're an incredibly important part of Britain's and the Black Country's story.
what does the weather have in store for us? Well, now's the time to find out.
The weather for this week ahead looks to be mostly dry and settled. Temperatures for the week will be hovering around 15 degrees. UV levels are expected to be moderate throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 5:34 a.m. for the sunrise and 8:38 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 29th of April and Saturday 30th of April, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 14 degrees. For Sunday 1st of May all the way through to Wednesday 4th of May, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 15 degrees. And for Thursday 5th of May, we will have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 15 degrees. So that's your forecast for this week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Cheers for that weather update, Mina. Up now, we go over to Craig, who has for us a piece all about a very popular foodstuff in our region.
Hello everyone, I'm Craig. We are taking a look at pork scratchings. The history of pork scratchings are clouded in mystery. However, the consensus of opinion is they originated here in the Black Country. It would seem that pork scratchings were very much the food of the working classes, with origins back in the 1800s, when it's produced as part of the tradition of families keeping their own pig at home, then feeding it up for slaughter. Not wanting any waste, anything, all the parts of the pig would be used if possible. Historically, animal skin was used for leather and vellum, as the skin requires a fair amount of preparation to transform it into one of these final products. I say necessity is the mother of invention, and us canny folk from the Black Country manage to transform waste to wonder simply by cooking the skin as you find it. You just cut it away from the meat, chop it up into pieces, and boil it up in the fat from the animal. Butchers started selling pork scratchings to the public in the 1930s, and they called it crackling. They were sometimes available hot or warm if you purchased them soon after they had been cooked. More often than not, you'd be able to boil them cold, small, served in a small paper bag. Today they are the staple in the pubs up and down the country. You won't get better scratching than those made here in the Black Country. They are for sure one of the best exports from our region.
Have you done any good at the quiz this week? Well, now's the time to find out, as we have the quiz answers.
Hello, and here are your quiz answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. How old is the Black Country Museum this year? And the answer? 44. Question 2. How many acres does it occupy? And the answer here is 26. Question 3. How many old mines shafts are thought to be beneath the site? And of course the answer here is 40. Question 4. What is the name of the chemist shop? And the answer here is Emile Dew. Question 5. What is the name of the lad who is thought to hunt the bottle and glass pub? And the answer here is Isaac Mayall. And finally, question 6. What milestone has recently been achieved by the museum? And the answer, it's had its 10 millionth visitor since opening. How did you do? Great, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to this week's Guess the Sound question that Rob asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of a blacksmith's Hammer. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we get into the garden as we take a look at Maytime flowers and their scents.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
This is Jan with an article written by Jane. May 1st is a day of celebration that brings with it the tradition of maypole dancing, Morris dancing, and festivals across the country. The month of May is named after Maya, the Roman goddess of fertility, and as we're now into the fifth month of the year, we can expect to find some scented flowers for us all to enjoy in the garden. There is also the option, of course, to cut some of the flowers to bring springtime scents inside to brighten up our homes. In the garden during May, we will also find pollinators such as bees, moths and butterflies visiting flowers to collect nectar and pollen. The role of pollinators is important to all of us in helping to cross-fertilise plants, making sure that a wide range of plants continue to thrive in our countryside, farms and gardens. Bees are among the busiest pollinators. They have electrostatic charges on their bodies, and these help pollen to adhere to their legs and bodies as they go from flower to flower, thus pollinating a mixture of flowers in one day. If you are seeking spring scents to enhance the garden in May, you could search out bedding plants, such as Nicotiana, that's tobacco plants, and sweet peas, which are particularly fragrant at this time of year. Sweet peas grow best on wigwam supports and fences. They also provide a bright splash of colour in pink, purple and white. Honeysuckle is another perfumed plant that brings a country garden feel, even if you live in a town centre. Honeysuckle likes to grow in hedgerows or on a trellis or pergola in the garden. The scent can be smelt all day, but may be at its best in the evenings. Another option for a scented garden is woodruff. This is a low-growing perennial that likes shady areas and has a definite perfume. And last, but not least in May, is an old favourite, Lily of the Valley. The cream-coloured flowers have many green leaves protecting them. Growing in shady areas, they produce a wonderful scent and are often cut and placed in vases indoors. If you grow any of these flowers in your garden, May will be a good month in which to sit outside in the sunshine and just enjoy their scents as you drink a cup of tea.
TNF Soundings.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sightless tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!